Welcome to Book Pile Banter. This is Amberly with Sarah and Kim. And today we are doing a double special episode. And it is one for Kim's birthday. Happy birthday, Kim. You're a year older.
Thank you.
Just like the podcast, actually. Technically, this is like a three in one because the podcast is now a year older as well. We are in our third or fourth year. I don't know. I did not look that up before starting this episode, and time is a concept that is loose for me. But Kim, kindly for her birthday pick, also wanted us to participate in the Trans Rights Readathon. So for this episode, we are doing Most Ardently, a Pride and Prejudice remix by Gabe Cole Nouveau. And it was published in 2024 via Fowell and Friends, which I believe is a subsection of Macmillan's. This book is part of a YA series that reimagines iconic classic stories for queer youth. Per Gabe's website, Gabe Cole Nouveau, he, him pronouns, is a Latinx trans masculine award-winning New York Times bestselling author who writes speculative fiction featuring marginalized characters grappling with identity. Now leveled up with an MFA in writing for children, when he isn't answering emails at his day job or buried under his two cats, you'll likely find him knitting or crocheting something cute. And then, in order to, like, properly function within the Trans Rights Readathon, we do have an organization that we are highlighting, and we would love for you to donate if you have the time, money, and ability to. And the one that we picked is the Trans Youth Equality Foundation. I thought this was an excellent one because it is actually started by a mother of a trans... Where did I find that? Organization was founded by a mother of a transgender child. With support from some good friends, an experienced doctor, civil rights lawyers, and others, she began to build a broad... to build a board and programs. I'm sorry, I can't read today. Through her own struggles to find resources for her child between 2002 and 2007, she realized the great need for high-quality resources and support services for youth and their families. TYEF seeks to address this need through our yearly youth retreats, including a popular summer and fall camp, Trans Waves, an educational podcast program, so they have their own podcast, definitely go check it out, trainings for educational and medical professionals, youth workshops, and our social media presence. TYEF was founded upon the principle that no family and no child has to be alone on this journey. And their website is www.transyouthequality.org. And they do accept donations via card, PayPal, and I think it was said ActBlue, which is another means of donating kind of in a secure platform. And they give the heads up that the cost for one child to attend one of their camp overnight retreat kind of situations is $485, but partial donations are also welcome. So go check it out, see what they have. They've got a really cool website. It's beautiful, lots of resources. They also recommend books for different transgendered individuals as well. So, you know, if you have a transgender youth in your family or you are one yourself, definitely go see what books they recommend beyond what we already read. Okay, now, our book that we are discussing, Most Ardently, the plot. I almost forgot that and all of that information that I needed to give out. The plot is, all the way up there where I can't see it. Oliver struggles to carve out a space for himself in the Regency era while his mother just wants him to marry and become a wife. At the same time, he meets a boy named Darcy, and neither are sure of their feelings. So, this episode, we are not going to do our ranking system, mostly because we just didn't want this to be a topic that we were applying a ranking to, since it's for the Trans Rights Readathon. We will, obviously, in our Pride Month, do our usual ranking, though. So, in a broad sense, what were our feelings on this book? Who would like to get us started?
Sarah would.
What? Why?
What?
I didn't volunteer for that.
In the military, we call that being voluntold.
Well, I'm not in the military, so you can't tell me what to do. Why are you still looking at me expectantly as if I'm going to do it?
I'm looking at both of you.
I liked this book in the general sense. So it was A cute little romance. Definitely YA. I don't know what else to say. It was good.
I will say that for me, it came at a very good time. Like, because I was not in a very good headspace, as we know. And so, like,
we do.
The very thought of like trying to read to get engaged and like fully invested in a complicated storyline, or especially any storyline with like just, I don't know, I don't want to say darker themes, but just like some of the books that we read can be kind of grim and stuff, or just exhausting. And I was like, I just don't, which is why I'm super stoked for the mystery section. I really hope it involves a lot of murder and darkness, like so ready for it, you know. But this one, like, I just, the very thought of having to sit down and read was kind of daunting. But then when I started reading this one, it was just really easy for me to read and enjoy. And
it was a good cleanse for you.
Yes. Just light, fluffy, very, very fanficky, which might have been why it was just easier to read. But yeah, it was enjoyable for someone struggling in the moment.
Okay. I have two responses to this book. I have to split it. So in terms of what we read it for, trans representation, I enjoyed the trans representation in this because it was not necessarily positive, but it was not necessarily negative. I think it was realistic. The person was still being deadnamed. Oliver was still being deadnamed in this. Oliver still had to navigate with the wider, like, social structuring as to how to be themselves, but they were finding a successful way to do that. And in the end, it comes out to a positive storyline. And so I liked that. My computer is not charging. Not charging. Just a second. Okay. Computer issue temporarily solved. So in terms of the trans representation, I liked it. I definitely found it to be soothing representation. It wasn't too hard. And this is definitely one that, like, a middle grade heading into younger high school years, if they're like, I really like want a trans book that doesn't like require a lot of stress on my part, this would be the one I would recommend to them. In terms of being a Pride and Prejudice reimagining, there is so much potential that could have been played with, and I feel like all of that potential was dropped to make this more of kind of a cozy, low stakes read. And I don't think that if I were to write any kind of queer imagining of Pride and Prejudice, this is not quite the direction I would go. Mostly because you have so many great things that you could be playing around with, the Pride, the Prejudice and stuff. And a lot of those categories, just those concepts, the themes that make Pride and Prejudice were not executed well. But I think Sarah kind of pointed it out. It felt like fanficky, and not in a bad way, but like someone who really enjoyed something but didn't quite take it up to that level. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I had to, because in the beginning I was having a hard time with this book, like really hard time, because I was really stuck in the Pride and Prejudice retelling of it, or reimagining, however you want to phrase it. And I was just like, why this choice? Why that choice? Once I let go of Pride and Prejudice and just read the story, it was a perfectly fine book and I enjoyed it fine. But when my head was in Pride and Prejudice, it was not working for me at all. But even then I was like, but the trans representation is really good.
Yeah.
I like the fact that we're covering issues without them being
the primary trauma.
Yeah, thank you. Trauma, without them being traumatic.
What are your thoughts, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, the Pride and Prejudice stuff. How do I describe it? I was kind of torn. I feel like it would have been better to just write a era novel with original characters. You could even put a plot line. It does not have to be. So just taking Pride and Prejudice, the character names, and very thin plot points that don't even really get fully explored, and just kind of using that as your vehicle to do the trans experience. It was, I don't know, because I am not like a hardcore Pride and Prejudice fan, but I've read the book a couple times. I've seen the movie, the BBC series. And so while I would probably have trouble like reciting the story from memory with no like reminders or anything, as I was reading this, it was all coming back to me. And then it was just like really, the events we get are very shallow. And while I was not looking forward to the Wickham and Lydia plotline, the fact that that was just completely shoved aside, I was like, oh, okay.
That makes a major component of the, yeah.
And then I am not the biggest fan of Collins. Collins is not a favorite character of mine. I don't particularly love him in the original, but I don't take him to be quite as villainous as this author chose to do, where he was the one convincing and I was like, no, Collins is a bumbling fool at best. Mm-hmm. He's not that manipulative, and that
it's that like Wickham is kind of upset one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so to like make it that Collins knew and like did this thing was just, it bothered me. Full disclosure, as I come at this, is one, I have a bachelor's degree in English literature, and I emphasize my English literature more towards the British European worldly literature than American literature, because I don't like American literature as much. So I have read Pride and Prejudice. The 2005 Pride and Prejudice. Hope so.
I've read it
a lot of times and like massively dissected it. That's what I meant. The 2005 Pride and Prejudice movie is one of my all-time favorite movies. Like, that is a comfort movie. It's one of the few movies that I rewatch more than once. Which this book felt like it was just pulling dialogue straight from that movie. But so I know Pride and Prejudice very well. I have lots of thoughts on Pride and Prejudice. And I love reimaginings. I think Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is hilarious. I think Austin Land, the movie, is fantastic. Like, I love people playing with Pride and Prejudice. This was not the strongest playing with Pride and Prejudice that I've seen. And I think for me, like, the big piece that really, like, deterred me is when they decided to give Bingley two sisters, so that way then Darcy was not involved in the conversation of being prejudiced towards the Bennets. And that's like so quintessential to the story, is this fact that Darcy presents one way because that's what society expects. And then come to find out, he's just an awkward man who doesn't function very well in his society, even though he functions. And so there was so much potential here to set up the Pride and Prejudice elements of Pride and Prejudice and not make it traumatic, but like make it the key overcoming here. Darcy participating in that conversation, and then us getting to those pivotal conversations later on where Darcy is confessing his feelings, makes you realize, oh, he was just a dumbass who said dumb things.
Yeah, and... well, I mean, when you take the core bad traits and apply them to the secondary characters and not your main characters, you're losing the point. These two main characters did no wrong throughout the entire thing. I mean, I guess a little bit. Darcy was a little bit of a ass, but not Not
really, because we got those extra scenes where they got to hang out with each other. So very quickly on, Darcy is a sweet and endearing character. So it just, it lost, which I liked. Don't get me wrong. I liked those scenes. And I think Sarah had it completely correct. If you had done a Regency style, clear story and kept those components and pulled out the iconic Pride and Prejudice in this, would have eaten that story up. Like, oh my God, when is this character going to find out that Oliver's trans? What's going to happen? What's going to be the outcome of that? Are they going to end up together? How are they going to navigate that? Is it going to be that this poor trans character is going to continue to present as female, but will have the opportunity to be male at home? Or is Darcy going to be like, yeah, no, this is just my male companion, and allow Oliver the option to, like, live like that? Like, I wanted those details. There was so much there that would have been better as, like, its own story. And I wanted that story. I did not want the Pride and Prejudice in this. What are your thoughts, Sarah?
I agree.
Okay. that's it. You agree?
I'm sorry. There's some construction going on outside.
We can't hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't hear it, but I can. Well, I'm glad that you can't hear it, because I'm trying to, like, mute it. But I'm paying more attention to when that's going and what you're saying. but in the moment when I said I agree, I did remember what you were talking about. I have now forgotten what you were talking about.
So I would like to say that I wouldn't even have liked this as a Regency era. I would have preferred they put this in the modern times, because there were some aspects of this that were very modern, and that it's just like, there's just no way. The main thing being the bookstore. they literally talk about in the story about how books cost individually cost a tremendous amount of money, but they've got a bookstore that has two stories worth of books.
Yeah.
It's like, who on the planet is affording all of these supposed super expensive books to put them in a situation where a handful of people can afford to buy one? You know, that's not a viable business practice in any way, shape, or form. So, now I'm having a hard time.
Different top, like, departments, and Suffrages is the first department store.
But, and I'm getting tired of, it seems like the theme of books and writers is really prevalent in books right now. That it seems to be a theme that writers want to throw into their books. You know, one of the characters is a vast lover of reading. It's kind of a you know what I'm saying? Putting yourself in the story.
That's because you've had two of those this week.
I know.
What was the other?
I can't remember. What books did I? I don't remember.
I Can't was Tell Treason Without Tea. No.
Oh, Kim, yeah.
Listen to Can't Tell Treason Without Tea. And she was not in the mood for, unequivocally, you are not in the mood for a cozy read. Because you are deep in the gothic love.
Yeah. Oh my God. Kill me.
No, not deep in the gothic love. I'm reading One Dark Window and I'm loving it. I don't gothic. Think it's, is it?
Yes.
Not really.
It is. It's a gothic fantasy.
Anyway.
Martin hate it when there's, like, the character is like an author in a book.
Yes. Yes.
So similar.
It feels like the author's putting themselves in the story. And that's, I'm getting tired of it. And it's not just these books that I've read. It's something I see in a lot of books that we've been reading.
So you can't hear the sound that's going right now?
No.
Nope.
Okay, cool. Then I won't bother trying to mute it. Oh.
No, nope, don't worry about good. It. Can't hear it at all.
It's like a power saw. So I'm like, you can't hear it. You can't hear it.
So you guys are all like, I'm getting tired of authors inserting. I have to say, I am very excited,
I didn't say that.
Of reading this book by Allie K. Mulford. I'm mentioning this because they're non-binary. It's called She's a Keeper. It's about a zookeeper who falls in love. and the author was a zookeeper, and that's
how a person met her or a husband. Toucan, because there's different things on that cover. So I'm a little
with a New Zealander husband. Her husband, their husband, is from New Zealand and is also a zookeeper. So she basically was like, "I want a rom com, How We Met in a Zoo, and everything." And I am so excited to read it. And then there's a little like extra story that's a penguin. So yeah, I'm okay with the self insert sometimes. But prove to me if you're a writer who can write really well.
If that is the intent of the story,
yeah.
Yes. But to randomly throw a massive Barnes & Noble style bookstore into the middle of, and that's what then threw me into the, wait a minute, they're walking to London, they have this massive bookstore. None of this stuff happened that close to London. And then I had to look up where Pride and Prejudice had to take place. I had to see actually how close it was to London, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But once I let it all go, it's a perfectly good book. It's a good representation of trans issues without, like we said before, without the trauma being possibly triggering.
Or being the the substantial plot point.
Right, right.
Honestly, part of this is because this author has other books and they are classified as middle grade. I honestly, other than this was a part of a YA series, I would have been like, if you have a middle grader who is wanting some trans representation, you want to get them introduced to like a classic storyline, this is the book I would recommend. For more of a middle grade. And part of it is, this drove me nuts, the fact that the author kept using boys to describe Darcy.
That was so weird.
It was weird.
Like, even if they're in their late teens, early 20s, like historically they would be men. So it's so Oliver should have thought of them as men.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you found that weird too, Sarah. But like, I was like, if this was a middle grade book, that would make sense. Sometimes,
or if you put it in our time frame rather than their time frame,
yeah, and not have it be that they're just like in their late or mid teens, that would make sense. But Darcy has his own entire estate and is traveling without any parental guidance needed. He's not a boy.
And he's responsible for all these people who live on his estates. And, this is a man. I don't care what age he is. He is a man.
Yeah.
With manly responsibilities.
That threw me off so much.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I will say, I did like Elizabeth being Oliver. I will say of all of the Bennett sisters, that one not being a daughter was kind of nice. Like, it made the most sense. I will, however, say it felt more like the characterization of what's her name from Little Women than actually Elizabeth from Pride and Prejudice.
Joe.
Joe would make a... I would love to see someone do Little Women with a trans character.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be fantastic. And then... I don't know. I feel like it was a missed opportunity. I actually would have kind of liked this if instead of it being that Elizabeth was transitioning to Oliver, I actually would have liked to have seen a male character transitioning into a female character and being Elizabeth. I feel like that would have created some more of those stakes in this story, because then you would have had this son who's expected to inherit the Bennett home, who actually feels like a daughter. And by being true to themselves, risks losing the family estate, as opposed to kind of this situation where it was like, this is my son, and now he can inherit for us. Which, again, just kind of loses the Pride and Prejudice. Like, the meat of it is the risk is, these children don't necessarily want to marry. But literally, the future livelihood is at stake if they don't do this.
Especially
and do it well.
The male inheritor doesn't want to take them on as a responsibility.
Yeah.
because they at the time, that's what was going to happen. It's one of the major stakes in the original Pride and Prejudice book is these, when you have so many children and you never produce a daughter, you never produce an heir, you're losing everything. And those women, unless they marry and they marry well, they have no financial future. They're not allowed to own anything. They're not allowed to make money. They're not allowed to, yeah,
it, yeah, the list is endless. They become charity cases.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and even still, they're becoming charity cases to their cousin, right? Colin was their cousin.
Yeah.
I think.
So I almost like the transition. I would have liked to have seen it the other way. That would have increased the risk a little bit while still giving us the romance. But I think also, I don't know that I've read a lot, and that could just be a failing on my side. I've not read a lot of young adult where it is born male who wants to transition to female. I feel like it's a little bit more underrepresented than, say, female transitioning to male. You guys can, Sarah, I don't know. Have you read a lot of male to female, Sarah, or mostly male to female to male?
I mean, I haven't read a ton in general, but it is more assigned female at birth to male. I do remember I read If I Was Your Girl by Meredith mm-hmm. Russo. That one is assigned male at birth to female. That was a really good book. And that's like the only one that comes to mind. It might be the only one I've read so far.
I know of some that are more adult romances, which now I'm kind of curious to see it. What is our nonprofit that we're highlighting recommend? For older. Let's see here. These are all picture books. Oh, Pet. I've heard really good things about Pet, but I haven't read it. That was the only one that they had on their list that I would say is that I recognize as a teen that is male to female. This then makes me curious. What about your ones for boys? Let's see. Lots of picture books. Oh, no chapter books on that one. So yeah, I feel like that was kind of like a slightly missed opportunity here.
It certainly would have made things more compelling. I'm not going to lie. So, you know.
Okay. So you agree with this. And... right? Okay. So you would have found that a little bit more compelling is a male to female where the risk was losing the estate.
Okay. I mean, I think it would have added a little bit more depth than what we got.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes me feel a little bit better because I was like, oh man, Sarah's gonna hate that I suggesting this and be like, no, I wouldn't want that. So
she just told nice you to write it, so I think you have an assignment.
I don't. I am not the person. I'm not the person to write that. I. That is not my story to tell. So any of our transgender female listeners, which hopefully we have some. I would love to read it if you write it. Feel free to send it our way. We will read it and we will discuss it. Because, yeah, I don't... Maybe. Sarah just made a face like she was terrified that we're suddenly going to get
I agree with the we don't read fan fiction and evaluate it because that's a different...
I meant more like if you get your book published, not like...
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. If you manage to have a story that you can, or if anyone can recommend us one that has a non-horror, trans female character, we would love to read it. Sarah's giving me a weird face. She does not remember. Tell me I'm worthless.
Oh, I thought you were saying non-horror. And I was like, what the fuck?
Horror.
Where did this come from?
Horror. Sorry.
Horror. And the context just did not make any sense, so I got stuck on that.
Sorry, my accent has it that I dropped that cool. Last R a little bit for horror. And I do something weird with the H. I guess it's a wh instead of a huh. Kim's Maybe. Now trying to, because I say horror, so it's huh, like whore.
Yeah, tell me I'm
I think that horror. I think horror is just a very difficult word to say. Yeah.
Horror.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, when you guys say it, I don't accidentally hear whore. Although I think I had someone say it to me the other day at work, and they were like, "Yeah, I really love this horror story," and I went, "We are at work."
It's like
what
if you don't
talking
get
about
any context to expect what the word is going to be,
yeah,
you won't necessarily get it. So when you just said non-horror, it just, you know, if it's like not a scary book or something, then I would have understood you were saying horror. But otherwise,
side note, I have the closed captions on so I can like read as you guys are talking what you're saying. And Sarah, when you said non-horror, it did non-horre.
Horre. Okay. Wow. That's
okay. But anyway, so yeah, that was like I felt like there were great opportunities to elevate the story without making yeah, Kim.
I think the greatest missed opportunity in this book was when the father and Oliver were in the father's study talking, and Oliver was looking at the father's books. I think it would have been really interesting for Oliver then to see some of the books that he was encountering at the, I can't remember the name of the thing they were going to.
Yeah.
The Molly House?
The Molly House. There we go.
On his father's bookshelves. And then the two of them have a conversation about the father actually being either trans or gay and saying, "I made the choice to marry your mother because I had to. But I don't want that for you." I think that conversation should have happened. I think it would have added a gravitas to this story that would have really anchored it a little bit stronger. I think it was hinted at possibly, but I don't think it was really there.
Or even if it was a, instead of a, because I had to, a sort of, but I decided this for myself.
Right. And well, that's what I mean, because I had to. Making the choice to live that life.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I got to that topic, that conversation. I was like, man, I really wish this was a moment where he was like, you get to choose how you live your life amongst society. And for some of us, we make the choice to appear assimilated in order for ease. And recognizing that for trans individuals, that assimilation isn't always as easy. And I think that's regularly, particularly in the queer community, something that's not looked at is, you know, those of us who are pansexual, lesbian, ace, like you can still have the option to slide under the radar and pass. For trans individuals, particularly if they're not able to have access to the medical means to make themselves more passing in appearance of the gender they prefer, it's a tougher road to walk. And I think, yeah, having that conversation where the father could be like, I don't know what it feels like to be you, but I can understand the difficulty in deciding on whether or not you want to be comfortable in society versus being true to yourself is so hard. And this is the choice I made. These are my regrets about it. But at the same time, I'm so happy because I have you as a child.
Yeah.
I would have loved that. I don't think that's represented too much in literature. And it was such a great opportunity to have that kind of poignant conversation. And it would have played into that concept of Pride and Prejudice.
Yep.
Is what do you do? How do you interact with people when there are preconceived prejudices towards you and your own pride dictating how you want to act? So, yeah, that's my thought. Yep. I don't know if you all agree or not, but that's my thought.
No, well, I started the conversation, so I agree.
Okay. What about you, Sarah? Would you have wanted that conversation in there?
I don't know. I didn't get that sense at all when I was reading it, so it hadn't occurred to me until you guys brought it up just now. I guess I am not ambiguous, not ambivalent. I don't really have a preference. I guess it could have been interesting.
Ambivalent, I was fine would with that the way- be the...
I feel like ambivalent is like swinging between two extremes, like either...
No, I don't believe so.
Anyway.
But I mean, I do think that considering the fact that both the mom and the dad both accepted Oliver really easily, which I kind of get why it happened, but at the same time, it seemed unlikely that that would have been the case. It would have been more interesting to have, you know, if you're going to have the mom accept Oliver so easily, she could have been the token, like, you know, cis character to accept this person, you know, to accept this version that Oliver wanted to be. And then the dad, you know, there's more depth to it. So, yeah.
And if it had been there, I feel like it then would explain why the mom is so accepting. Because if she knows that the father made this choice,
what if she possibly didn't, even,
but that's what I'm saying is, what if they had set it up that his Oliver's mother and father came to the agreement that they were going to marry, and she knew he potentially, because there are people who do that, who make a preference to have that kind of marriage because they both want something in the marriage situation that works for them, even if they're not in love with each other, and or both of them are gay, or one of them is gay and one of them is not. Like, that isn't uncommon and unheard of. And it would have explained when the mom then finds out about Oliver to be like, oh, okay, I accept you. I love you. You're still my child. Because she would have all along been living her own kind of life that she'd be like, okay, I could see why maybe you don't want this for yourself. And again, it leads back into the original story, which is Mrs. Bennett, while is the driving factor that her daughters have to get married, her only desire is for her daughters to do so happily. So she's obsessive about it because it's the only way she knows her daughters can stay happy and safe in life. It's not because she has a weird obsession with marriage. It's because she wants her daughters to be safe.
Yeah.
And so, again, that then would have played into the situation so well, because then when we have that moment where her mom is like, or his mom is like, I accept you as you are, it's like, oh, it's because she's already living her own variation of what safety looks like. And for her, it could have totally made sense for her to meet this gay man. She thinks that he's going to propose to her, and her come at him and be like, him come at her and be like, listen, I'm willing to marry you, but you got to understand, it's always going to be a marriage of convenience, not of love. And them settling into their own version of love by being like, I'm going to give you children. And then it being like, oh, well, we've had daughters now. We need to keep trying because we really need a son to protect our daughters. And then, you know, after how, like, four daughters being like, this is not working. We need to stop trying for children, and them not have any more. And then them existing. She's responsible for the household and he's doing his own thing. And that works so well with how Mr. Bennett is in the original story, because he is like, the household is your mother's domain. I am just here. So, sorry. That's me. I don't know. I don't know what just happened there. I'm so busy thinking of how the story could have been.
But overall, it was a really good story. I mean,
yeah.
If you want a lighter read.
Yeah. Is there any other elements that we haven't touched upon that anyone wanted to discuss? No? Okay.
I don't think so.
And, oh, go ahead, Sarah.
There's just the one thing that did kind of bug me in the story was the fact that Oliver always seemed to be kind of more prescient of other characters than Elizabeth would have been. Like, he automatically, like, knew that Wickham was up to no good.
Yeah.
I don't really like it when authors do that with their character, like if especially like in fanfic or whatever, where they're like writing a familiar storyline, but the characters just automatically knows all the trouble spots and can navigate them perfectly. So that was perhaps, other than the fact that everything was a little bit too shallow in the Pride and Prejudice section, that was the other thing that bothered me, was like, of course, Oliver is so worldly that he just knows these risky individuals are up to no good.
Yeah.
I also feel like the situation with Charlotte was kind of weird.
In what way? Because I'm not disagreeing, but I'm just curious in what way you meant.
It was a failed attempt at what I said they should have done with the mother and the father. This notion that some people make this choice to have this for the convenience. But instead of like really examining it, Oliver is kind of an ass about it. Like, oh, why would you marry him? He's not who you're in love with. And doesn't really ever come to terms with the choice. It just kind of gets dropped. And then Collins is made the bad guy. And I was just like, oh my God, Collins is the bad guy. Charlotte is now married to this man. And like, we're not going to discuss the ramifications that has on.
It's okay. She has her children now. It's all good. Because that's all a woman needs. Don't even get me started on that, but whatever.
So, like, I don't know. Like, that component of it just, like, felt so weird. And, like, it was just designed that way to explain why Charlotte would support Oliver sneaking over to their house to get changed. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, really fleshing Charlotte out and Charlotte's situation out with full thought. Yes, Sarah, you look like you want to say something.
Oh, no, I didn't even think about the fact that Charlotte was married to Collins. And now if Oliver ever wants to visit Charlotte, it's going to be fucking awkward at their house.
Yeah.
I was just like, what did you do to Charlotte? Why would you do this to Charlotte? She was already getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah, but they, shit. Yeah. I wasn't, the twist of Collins being I did not like that. That was an aspect of it.
Not.
It was just like, again, if we had taken all of this out of Pride and Prejudice and made it a different story, maybe. But again, why is Charlotte getting, like you said, the short end of the stick? I was going to phrase it a different way, but then I decided not to.
What other way were you going to phrase it?
I was going to say shit on, but yeah. Oh,
I would have said shafted, and I was like, that's probably not appropriate.
But yeah. I don't know. It's not my favorite element of the story. However, yeah. I will say what I did like is I did like the cute moments of Darcy and Oliver, like, being boys together. Just hanging out, like they were cute moments that I appreciated when I was pretending like this wasn't Pride and Prejudice as I was reading it. So
yeah, you know, when I chose this book, I was excited about the Pride and Prejudice retelling of it. It's why I chose it. However, that part of it fell very short for me. But as far as just a good trans representation, young adult book, it does.
And leaning more towards the young and young adult, I will say.
Yeah. And there's a lot of times when you read these things that you can go, okay, I now don't have to delve into the actual book. Anybody who thinks they're going to read this and not have to ever really, you don't have to engage in any book you don't want to engage in, but this is not something that you can substitute reading Pride and Prejudice for.
When I was reading it, I felt like, I think I tried to read Pride and Prejudice when I was like in middle school, and it was kind of just beyond my level. And it's like, I could see how if you read like this book first, you wouldn't get the whole story, obviously, but it would kind of make things more comprehensible when you do try to read the real book, because you kind of understand what's going on. I don't know. That's the feeling that I got. I was like, oh, it kind of, it's written a little bit more accessibly for a younger reader, even though it definitely does not follow the same storyline.
I would recommend that they watch the movie with Keira Knightley in it.
BBC series is so much better.
Is it good? I think I've seen it, but I can't remember.
It's so much truer to the book. It is really long.
So I've heard that. I've heard that it's more accurate to the book. I will say, though, I do, the 2005 is just, it's cute. And thematically, it makes the themes so concise and clear that it's not hard to then process, like, because sometimes when you read the book, it's like really hard to be like, okay, so who's prideful, who's prejudiced, when does this shift, when does this change, why does it do that? When you watch the 2005, it's like, ah, those are the critical moments that are like, that's where the pride and the prejudice aspect of this entire story is coming into it. And I think that's where Most Ardently kind of fails in terms of being able to read this and then go on to the next story, is it does not have the themes that are in Pride and Prejudice, that if someone were to read Most Ardently and then skim through Pride and Prejudice to be like, yeah, I read it for high school or I read it for my college class because I had to, they might miss the comprehension needed to discuss Pride and Prejudice as a literature piece. But that's my bias as a English major.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who skims Pride and Prejudice would not be able to discuss the themes very well. So,
And there's no pretending. Pride and Prejudice is not an easy read. Austen is not an easy read, period, the end. Anything she writes is you have to pay attention to what you're reading. You can't just blow through it and pretend like you caught what was going on. But yeah, I mean, for a middle schooler, maybe a good starting point, and then you could dive into it. Or not middle schooler. This is probably.
No, I'd say middle schooler. I can imagine handing this to my nephew and him easily reading this without any struggle.
I think he would wonder where's the Pride and the Prejudice. You know,
he wouldn't, at least, because it doesn't say Pride and Prejudice. It says Most Ardently. It's not saying Pride and Prejudice.
The full title is Most Ardently, a Pride and Prejudice remix. That's the official title of the entire book.
Yeah, but it's like a kid's not really going to think that deeply about it.
No, that's why I said middle schooler, this I could see handing this to my nephew and him reading it and enjoying it. And then if he were ever to have to read Pride and Prejudice, he'd be like, oh, I feel like I've read something similar to this. And it'd be fine. I think if you gave it to, say, like a sophomore or junior in high school, they'd be like, this is kind of babyish.
Possibly, yeah.
And I only say that because I regularly interact with high schoolers anywhere from freshman to senior, and listening to them discuss books, most of them, honestly, most teens are heading more towards adult books by the time they're in high school than young adult books. They have some exceptions, but most of them, when they're talking to me, I mean, like, a bunch of them are reading Dune right now. For fun!
Well, the movies came out, so, you know.
Yeah! And they're reading it for fun.
It's current.
It's actually quite funny, because then they were all trying to talk to me about it, and it was quite the conversation. But not what we're discussing here. But this is not something that, if the teens that I interacted with were going to recommend, ask me for a book, this might not be. If I had a parent coming to me who's like, I really need like a slightly more mature read for my child, and they really want trans representation, I'd be like, Most Ardently. It's not going to be too dark and heavy for your child, but you're going to get some more of that like literary attempt to it. So, I think we lost Sarah.
Me?
I meant behind the eyes, not like network wise. All right. Any other thoughts?
Nope.
Okay. So then, once again, I just want to remind everyone that we are doing this episode for the Trans Rights Readathon, and the foundation that we highlighted was the Trans Youth Equality Foundation. Their website is transyouthequality.org. They do fantastic camps and getaways for trans individuals. They have resources available. So if you know someone, then feel free to share that with them. If you want to offer support, then go give a donation to them. That would be greatly appreciated. And don't forget, Transgender Visibility Day is March 31st. So we will see you next time. We are heading into our mystery genre with our next episode. So on that note, our intro and outro music is by Grant Newman and is called The Battle of the Nile from Epidemic Sound. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to Bookpile Banter on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, or whichever platform you listen to your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you on any of our social media platforms, such as Instagram or TikTok. You can find us at book_pile_banter. You can support us on bookshop.org. Our link is available via our social media. You can also email us at bookpilebanter@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.